It's TechBiter Worldwide with Bill Blinn. The latest on programs and policies, helpful hints, and a bit of occasional nonsense. All in more or less plain English.
Podcast number 889 for the 5th of July, 2024. This week, the domain name service you use may have an effect on the speed with which web pages load, but there are other reasons to examine the DNS you use now and possibly change it. In short circuits, when you're giving away or selling a computer or a disk drive, think about the files that were on the computer. Just deleting them doesn't really remove the data. How much more you need to do depends upon how much you value privacy and security. And Xire, the company that makes the standalone Xire Photo and the Lightroom Classic plugin Xire Search, is also helping law enforcement agencies evaluate photographic evidence. In previous episodes, I've mentioned using a domain name service provider other than the one that your internet service provider offers. But how do you find the right one? It's actually pretty easy, and it's automated. You might think of DNS as the world's largest phone book. It includes the IP address of every domain on the planet, so you can find that techbiter.com is really 67.222.41.89 in terms that the hardware and software that run the internet can comprehend. It also provides information about how your computer can request and receive information from 67.222.41.89. That is important because the route your connection takes today might differ from the route it used yesterday, and it'll certainly be different from the one that it takes tomorrow. That's one primary difference between the internet and the old telephone service, or POTS. Plain old telephone service, POTS. In the old days, phone calls were routed through mechanical switches, and the connection was maintained until the end of the phone call. Internet connections, whether for text or music or video, depend on packets of data from the website or other service. The packets are received by your computer, possibly not even in the order they were sent, and then they're reassembled. Any given packet may take a different path from the ones before it and those that arrive after it. The DNS may be queried dozens of times for every packet as it makes its way from the sender to your computer. Each of those queries takes a tiny but still measurable period. That's why a faster DNS can make your internet service seem a bit faster. A bit faster. Not by all that much. You might notice a little difference, but you probably won't. If you really need internet service that's faster than what you have, you'll need to upgrade to a faster plan. Even a 10% increase will be virtually negligible. So there are reasons other than increasing speed to consider changing to a new domain name service provider. When you use a DNS not provided by your internet service provider, the ISP can no longer track your browsing history and sell it to advertisers. Some third-party DNS providers offer additional security features, such as malware blocking and encryption. And because third-party DNS providers often have servers located in various locations around the globe, reliability and uptime may be better than your ISP's DNS servers. My article in April, which I have a link to on the TechBiter Worldwide website, explained how to change the DNS settings on your router and provided a link to information about making the change on individual computers. But which DNS provider or providers should you choose? That's where this little automation trick comes in. Steve Gibson has been writing specialized software for decades. His DNS benchmark, which is free, is the best way to find which services will work the best for you where you are located. Download the program and run it. You'll find a link on the TechBiter Worldwide website. There is no installation required, so it doesn't tamper with your computer in any way. Just run it from the downloads directory. The process does take a while. Start by making sure that no big uploads or downloads are currently running on the computer. You can run DNS benchmark without creating a custom name server list. However, the results will be better if you take a few minutes to do that first. You'll need to do it only once, and it'll take perhaps 30 minutes. When first run, the program should suggest that. If you don't see that reminder, select the Name Servers tab, click the Add Remove button, and then select Build Custom Name Servers List. Then sit back and relax for half an hour or so. Although the program does contain a default list of well-known public DNS resolvers, each DNS resolver's performance is affected by its distance from the user. No single list can be perfect for everybody. A fast resolver for a user in Los Angeles could be unacceptably slow for someone in London or Canberra. That's why you need a custom list. At this time, the process scans 4,849 DNS resolvers around the globe to determine whether they are accessible and responsive from your location. For resolvers that respond, the test measures the resolver's minimum response time, as well as whether it appears to be operating reliably and correctly. When the scan is complete, the IP addresses of the 50 fastest qualifying resolvers are loaded. They can then be examined comprehensively by the test. Building the list creates a new file called dnsbench.ini in the directory where dnsbench.exe is located. You can view that file in any text editor if you wish, but you don't need to, and if you do, don't change it. The dnsbench.ini file will be loaded whenever the DNS benchmark application is run. So you need to run the list creation process only if your location changes substantially. After building the custom list, run the test, and during the test, real-time information will be displayed. The visual coding is complex, and I actually recommend just ignoring it and letting the test do what it needs to do. But if you want to look at it and know what it's showing, visit the Gibson Research website. You'll find a link on the TechBiter Worldwide website, where you'll find that a green dot in the symbols column shows the server is running and not doing anything questionable. Orange markers show the name server is responding, but that it will show an advertising page if you request a domain name with a typo. Red means the name server does not respond. You'll also see several bar graphs that show other information. The red bar shows cached domain lookup times. Most name servers cache common domain names for prompt responses. By default, the benchmark sorts the name server performance by the cached value. The green bar shows the uncached domain lookup times. If the name server doesn't have the IP address in its cache, the response will take longer. The value represents the time required to obtain an answer that's not in the cache. And the blue bar shows the time required to fetch an IP address from what's called a .com name server. The test will be faster than the list-building operation, but it'll take maybe 10 or 15 minutes because so many additional tests are included for the 50 fastest responding resolvers. When the test is complete, view the tabular data if you wish, but the most important information is in the Conclusions tab. I recommend skipping all the other tabs and just going directly to Conclusions. Scroll down, pay particular attention to any sections that are shown in red. You'll see my results on the TechBiter Worldwide website. Now, I should note that I ran DNS Benchmark about a year and a half ago, so I expected few or no changes to be recommended. Here were my results. System has multiple redundant name servers configured. Nothing to change here. Everything is configured properly and working well, and you should have multiple redundant name servers. All system name servers are alive and replying to queries. Nothing to change there either. Now, this was in red. System name servers are not ordered for best performance. After reviewing the results and doing a little extra testing, I concluded that the differences between the two DNS servers was not statistically significant, and so I made no changes. This was also in red. System name servers are slower than 38 public alternatives. The slowest name server is my tertiary entry, and that server will probably never be queried. I decided not to make any changes. The system's name servers are 100% reliable. Well, no change needed there. All system name servers return errors. That sounds dangerous, but actually it's a very good thing. I've included the full text of the DNS benchmark conclusions and recommendations. Read further and you'll discover why it's a good thing and why no additional changes are needed. And finally, system name servers are replying to all query types. Therefore, no change is needed. The website has the full DNS benchmark conclusions and recommendations, all the text from there. So read that and you'll understand why I made or didn't make any changes. And then download DNS benchmark from Steve Gibson's website and find out if making some DNS changes would be beneficial to you. If you find these podcasts useful, and I hope you do, might you consider a donation? There are no ads here, and support from listeners is the sole source of income. It's easy. Just visit the website and click the donate button near the top of any page. You can make a one-time donation or schedule a repeating donation every month. I thank you. And so does the cat. In short circuits, don't forget to wipe your disk. When you sell an old computer that you've retired or a disk drive that you've replaced with a newer or faster disk drive, it's a good idea to clear your data from the old one. Fortunately, it's pretty easy to do. Some applications, such as Bitdefender Total Security and most disk partitioning utilities, include a disk wipe function. If you don't have one, there are free open source utilities such as Disk Wipe. Maybe you're wondering why you need to do anything at all. Just delete the files and empty the trash. Now, as reasonable as that sounds, it doesn't really eliminate the data. Deleting a file simply means marking it as deleted, but the bits that make up the data are still there, and the files can still be recovered, even if you empty the trash. If you're selling a computer, use the Windows Recovery function and then choose Reset with the Remove Everything option. That deletes your personal files, installed programs, apps, and settings. Whoever buys the computer will need to create a new account, install applications, and establish settings as if the computer was brand new. That actually still leaves some data on the disk, but most of the time it's sufficient unless you're a criminal or a terrorist and you're planning to sell the computer to a federal three-letter agency such as the FBI, CIA, or NSA. If the computer has more than one drive, either physical or logical, you should also format all of the other drives, not the boot drive this time, making sure that you have turned off the quick format option. Both format and quick format prepare the disk for use by organizing its file system and removing any existing data. Quick format is fast because it only removes the existing file system structure and replaces it with a new one. It doesn't check for errors and it doesn't perform a thorough scan. Data recovery software can still retrieve all the old files on that disk you've formatted with quick format. Starting with Windows Vista, the full format function also writes zeros to the disk drive. That's why it's adequate for all but the most security conscious, not to say paranoid, users. While the quick format process will take just a few seconds, a full format will take much longer, and the amount of time required will depend on the size of the disk. When you need to clean a disk drive, you can ensure that any data remaining on the disk has been eliminated by physically damaging the drive. Hammers, drills, and hydraulic presses all work quite well, but they destroy not only the data, but also the drive and any resale value it had. Disk wipe eliminates the data, but leaves the drive in workable condition. A 64-gigabyte thumb drive required more than 30 minutes to be prepared using the standard format process. Disk Wipe is a portable application, so you just download it and run it. The main screen lists all of the connected disk drives and external memory devices. Now, this is a relatively old program, dating back to Vista, so the interface is dated. possibly for the same reason, DiskWipe throws an invalid floating point operation error when I selected the thumb drive. This didn't happen when I selected any other standard or solid state drive. The error does not affect the program's operation, so if you see it, just click the OK button and go on. DiskWipe's first screen shows information about the disk drive, the label, serial number, file system, and things like that. And there's also a View Data button. The image you'll see on the TechBiter Worldwide website shows data that remains on the thumb drive even though I've formatted it using the Quick Format option. Specialized disk utility tools would allow the deleted files from the formatted disk to be recovered. So if you have information that you don't want anybody else to get their hands on, this is not adequate. To delete all the data on the disk, click the Wipe Disk button and then choose a file system type. Then choose the erasing pattern. The one-pass option is the same as formatting the drive without quick format. If that's your choice, you might as well just use Windows to perform the task. Each of the other options makes multiple passes, and some write complex patterns of data to the drive and do it more than once. The more complex, the more time the process will take. A large drive being wiped with the Peter Gutman pattern might take days to complete. After selecting the pattern to use, follow the process to launch the operation, then go out to lunch, or maybe leave for a long vacation. And if you're wondering if the time required is worth it, well, if you're preparing a computer for a family member, I think not. Just create a new user and format any additional drives with or without the quick format option. But for sale to others, use normal format. And if you're selling the computer to someone you don't know or don't trust or donating it for reuse, consider one of the wiping options. XIR Search and XIR Photo help photographers find the images they're looking for in a digital photography catalog that has tens or maybe hundreds of thousands of images. But it also has a secret life as a crime fighter. The applications depend on artificial intelligence to examine and analyze the photos, and all of the analysis happens on the user's computer. The AI has been developed by a pattern recognition company, a business founded in 2005 as a spin-off from the University of Lübeck. Pattern recognition company's expertise is in developing AI products and applications for automated image analysis. It's based on experience in machine learning, neural networks, and computer vision. As it turns out, XIR's underlying technology has now been integrated into X-Ways Forensics. That's a program used by digital forensics experts around the world to investigate crime, analyze suspicious activity, and support security operations. The X-Ways Forensics software includes an XIR Forensics module that relies on XIR's computer vision modules to inspect images for a wide variety of content. Weapons, drugs, animals, food, and structures, along with a lot of other things. The XIR Forensics module, integrated in X-Ways Forensics, analyzes photos and recognizes image content. Then investigators are able to find photos that are similar to an existing photo. This could speed investigations. There are also options to find faces of specific people in photos, and it works with all common image formats. If you're not a law enforcement agency, don't even try to buy it. Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide. I'm Bill Blinn. There's more on the website, techbiter.com, and if you have a question or a comment, use the contact link you'll find there. Stop by again next week for another session.